Welcome to the first episode of the COP27 mini-series with your host, Abigail Kima. This podcast brings together key African players in the climate space to simply share their stories and their experiences as they advocate for climate justice in their unique capacities. For this series, we'll be interviewing people from across the globe as they advocate for climate justice in their unique capacities as well. Today on set, we are joined by an amazing guest, Patricia Kombo. Patricia is a youth climate activist from Kenya. She is best known for her tree planting initiative as part of her nonprofit, Her Tree Initiative. The initiative has planted over 10,000 trees as of 2020. And for this work, she was named a United Nations Convention to Combat the Certification Land Hero. Welcome, Patricia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming on this set today. And I've been following your work for a while now, and I must say it is so inspiring to see just how much you've grown. Can you tell us more about what you do and why you started this journey?
Thank you very much for having me. So my journey started while I was a kid, because when I was growing up, I grew up in an agricultural sector. And by the time I was growing, my dad was a renowned timber seller. So every rainy seasons, we used to grow trees. We used to have nurseries. And I can say I connected with nature when I was a young child. But I can totally say I really hated that work, because, you know, being in the farm every time, up until when I went to the university. And in 2019, I happened to volunteer with an organization to deliver relief food in Lodwar when we had the Kenyans for Kenya initiative. And my 2-week stay in Turkana was an eye-opener, because after interacting with women, children, I saw the impacts of climate crisis. And from interacting with them, I flashed back how my growing up was, how I took nature for granted, how the things that I had at my disposal by then, I did not realize their importance. And from interacting with communities, I asked myself, what can I do to help communities? And from there is where the Her Tree Initiative idea was born, to give communities a voice, to train them on how to adapt, mitigate, and more so to train the young children on importance of climate change, climate action mitigation, adaptation, and how they can, in their small capacities, remain resilient.
Yeah. So for our viewers, the Kenya for Kenya initiative was it back in 2010?
Yeah, 2010 and 2019 it came back.
So this was like a very terrible drought hitting the northern part of Kenya called Turkana. And at that time, we came together as Kenyans to donate food items for the communities in the Turkana region. And I remember, I think I was still in primary school then.
Yeah.
Of course, now when you grow up, you realize this was actually climate change at best. And why is this work important for you?
For me, the work that I do because of communities. I do because of livelihoods. Watching my 2 weeks stay, watching communities, watching women suffer, watching children go through mental trauma, the untold stigma that women have when their children are not doing. So everything that I'm doing for communities. I'm doing for them to be resilient. I'm doing for them so that they can have resilient livelihoods. I'm doing it because of our land, because to me, land is my identity. Land is my future. Land gives me peace. It gives us prosperity. It gives us equality. So everything I'm doing, I'm looking at a space whereby everyone is just, equal, prosperous, peaceful, and where the, you know, the livelihood is thriving.
Yeah. And I think we have one thing in common, because I was also brought up in a family that practices agriculture. And going to school was made possible because you could sell food items. And yeah. I think it's common for you too as well.
Yes.
And where I come from right now, schools allow parents to bring like bags of maize or bags of meals.
Yeah, the butter exchange.
Yeah, in supplement for tuition fees. So land is such an important aspect for us. Like, we literally depend on it.
Absolutely. Even me, my mom used to sell surplus maize, and my dad used to sell timber. And But again, now you have stopped the cutter because you used to do a lot of timber selling. But now, because I'm in the space of, you know, restoration, conservation,
yeah.
I've trained him on other alternatives of ensuring he has income. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's very important. Of course, things have to change in the changing climate.
Sure.
We have been speaking about COP27 for a long time, and we kept saying it's an African COP.
Oh, yeah.
And the conversations I've had with people was that we can only call it an African COP if the priorities of the African continent are heard and acted upon. And we are here now.
Oh.
And so what will you be up to at COP?
At first, my coming to COP, I'm looking at three things.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, I know it might sound off,
mm-hmm.
but number one, I'm looking at world leaders putting a key priority on land.
Mm-hmm.
It being an African COP, it means that Africa must be given a priority. And we're coming in a context where land has degraded at a, you know, at a large, I can say, speed.
Mm-hmm.
We have the degraded landscapes whereby even as young people, when we inherit these spaces, they are not impactful to us.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we are coming in a context where we have intensified drought, and they have increased in frequency and intensity, like what we are having in the Horn of Africa. This is the fourth consecutive year of drought. So I'm looking for the negotiation actually to give a key priority of combating the certification, ending drought, and using nature-based solutions actually for the mitigation and adaptation, because if our livelihoods are not catered for, even the climate action loses meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Second, I'm looking at the loss and damage,
mm-hmm.
and I'm always pissed off when I hear people talking about loss and damage in the monetary value, or rather with the economic losses that we see. And they are putting value on, let's say, if a building has collapsed, they are putting a value and, you know, quantifying the measure.
Yeah.
But they forget there is a different loss that is so magnitude. Loss of lives, loss of our belief, loss of our culture, loss of human mobility, loss of degraded landscapes. We cannot regain the fertility.
Mm-hmm.
So at this COP27, I'm looking for it to be actually meaningful COP27. I'm looking at a negotiation where they are going to address loss and damage with the non-economic angle, whereby they say for a life lost, you know, we cannot put a value. You cannot say for every life lost, we are going to put this money. So the negotiators must see beyond the monetary value, and they must act to avert, because we cannot say they are going to give us money, yet back in our countries, people are dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also looking at loss and damage in that angle,
mm-hmm.
and also for resilience.
Yeah.
We can't be losing people every time. Like I will use my example in my country, Kenya, where we share.
Mm-hmm.
In Kenya, people die in every season. When it rains, people die because of floods. When it fails to rain, people, livestock, livelihoods die because of drought, severe drought. So I'm looking at a conference that resilience will be at the center of implementation to ensure even when these extreme weather impacts, people can stand firm. And I'll give you a short scenario, because I happened to go to Spain during the International Day to Combat the Certification in June. And they were experiencing extreme heat wave and the drought season.
Mm-hmm.
But my stay in Spain compared to what is in Kenya, these are two totally different places.
Mm-hmm.
Spain, they have the capacity to adapt. The infrastructure is conducive. Even you don't realize, you know, it's dry. You don't even realize the temperatures. The people are well fed, and, you know, they have the drip irrigation. They have a lot of mechanisms. But if you come to our communities, even drinking water, the most basic commodity mm-hmm. is not available. Air quality is compromised, and other alternatives for people to stand firm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm looking for, and I hope this will not be another talk show
mm-hmm.
for world leaders.
Yeah.
And it's my prayer that they will give negotiation, knowing that, like, imagining we don't have another COP28, because I feel having an annual conference gives them a leeway to say, if we fail to negotiate to put this right, mm-hmm. we'll have next year too. You know?
Yeah.
So they should see we are all in a death point. And if they fail to take action, actually, Africa, I think we are going to be extinct as a continent.
Yeah. Because I mean, you've talked about loss and damage in a very... I've not had that perspective ever since I had conversations around loss and damage. So I think that's a very important way of looking at it. And also, for the podcast, what we were trying to do is give a face to the climate crisis.
Yeah.
Because it goes beyond, like you said, it goes beyond the monetary,
yes.
You know, or the economic ties to the things that we lose. Uganda experienced floods, losing over 20 people.
Yeah.
Pakistan, the same. Nigeria, the same. So how long will we keep having these conversations? And I feel like, as you said, the world leaders should actually see that, like, not looking at COP28 as another opportunity to act, but really act now because we don't have time.
Yeah.
And we know the drought situation in the northern part of Kenya is crazy, and we really do not have time to waste anymore.
Yeah.
You will be a part of a launch today about the International Drought Resilience Alliance, which is led by Spain and Senegal, that aims to shift drought management from emergency response to resilience against climate change impacts. And you've talked about resilience. So tell us more about that and what it's about and how we can help amplify that as well.
So the alliance, the International Drought Resilience Alliance, it's an alliance where world leaders from all spheres, all sectors of life, and from different countries have joined hands to address matters of drought and also to accelerate change and to help countries, vulnerable countries, to prepare in case of any emergence of drought.
Mm-hmm.
And they have four key objectives. And one of them is the political momentum, because we realize when our governments do not have a drought plan in their agenda, in their development agenda, it becomes a challenge for them to actually respond to some of these crises.
Mm-hmm.
So the alliance comes in a place to, it's like I can say the alliance is like a vehicle to move us, to help us transit to the next emergency response on how world will tackle drought to ensure livelihoods and people are not lost. And the government of Senegal and Spain, they actually came together. They will be launching the alliance today, later in the afternoon. And what they're trying to show is they're showing us that, unlike in the past when drought was seen as an African issue, they're showing us that no country in the world is immune to drought, because currently majority of countries are experiencing drought. Others are they have impending drought. So the coalition is, you can say, it is giving us hope. And they are looking at not only the financial support for the countries, but technological transfer, early warning system, because for us in our continent, we do not have the structure to predict early. And even with the meteorological and people predict, sometimes they get it wrong because of the changes. So the coalition is coming to upscale, to integrate the indigenous knowledge, like indigenous predicting knowledge, together with the intelligent. It will be indigenous plus the IT, the intelligent, to be able to help countries know when drought is impending. So it's a space that I'm so much looking forward to, because it is giving us hope that now our African issues, the drought issue, is being addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I can say I'm super positive is because in the past, when we were talking about climate crisis, we heard about rising water, melting glaciers, but little do you hear land degradation, little do you hear about drought. So this one is a step towards our countries building resilience.
Yeah.
And also they will be giving a plan on some of the short-term and long-term for countries. And UNCCD will also be launching a funding mechanism for countries to well prepare and also to engage in drought mitigation issues.
Yeah. And I think it's really important, being that, you know, we are always talking about the doom.
Yeah.
And it's nice to recognize when there is a step towards creating change.
Yeah.
So this gives me hope that communities will you know, we'll see a difference. Because
it has given me hope, because I've been in the space, I've worked with communities, and I know how degraded landscapes mean. Mm-hmm. Because looking historically where we come from, land is the only thing we nourish from our parents, from, you know, the older generation. Mm-hmm. And it's so painful when you inherit a land that is not productive at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's a waste. And that's why you've seen a lot of youthful migration through the most riskiest ways, through the Mediterranean. Young people are going to look for greener pastures, because you have the land. It's degraded. You know, the climate crisis is even worse. Mm-hmm. Weather patterns have changed. So with this alliance, I'm so optimistic that it's going to bring people. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud because it's inclusive of young people, indigenous, scientists, civil society, government. So it's a collaborative approach to ensure we hurry up the process.
Yeah. What are the two things that would make you say you attended a successful COP?
Number one, mm-hmm. loss and damage. That when loss and damage is addressed in both economic and non-economic damages that happen, mm-hmm. that I would say I attended a conference. And second, when world leaders will realize it's not only about financial solution, but also investing in land and nature-based ecosystem, because they generate 20-30% of mitigation needed to keep our temperatures to 1.5. So when they give priority to land, it will solve all our problem, because our economies, our business, our communities, our peace, our prosperity, all they thrive when we have healthy landscapes and when our soils is healthy.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that so passionately.
Yeah.
And finally, what kind of support would you like for your work?
Oh, for our work, what I can say, capacity building and a lot of training, because land degradation is happening basically because of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So when I get a lot of capacity building so that I can extend to our farmers, I can extend to our communities, that will be absolutely amazing. And also for us to do restoration work, we need a lot of finance for, you know, tree growing and other land restoration activities. Mm-hmm. But mostly importantly, even without the finance, we need people to be united and together to be united to create a long-lasting legacy on land. And I need a lot of support whereby young people, or rather world, will realize that land, soil, is the link between biodiversity, is the link between humanity, and it's the link between ecosystem. You know, if you take land, then you can't talk about climate change.
Yeah.
So the support that I need is the information about land to go to people, that land is critical in everything that you do.
Yeah. And at a very personal level, I have so much hope in community, because I have seen just how much they can do when they come together, even without the finances, just using the indigenous knowledge that they've had. They make such great changes within their community.
And I can give you a story of I want to check the year so that I won't miss. Mm-hmm. Okay, in 1975, mm-hmm. Niger suffered one of the worst, even what we're experiencing in all of Africa is less.
Yeah.
So Niger experienced one of the worst droughts, mm-hmm. and people migrated, people went, conflict.
Yeah.
And in one village, there is one man mm-hmm. who said, "Where should I go?" Mm-hmm. So he went back and he started growing trees organically, slowly, slowly. And after the community saw how the trees were growing, because they were drought tolerant, mm-hmm. people started coming back. They started growing trees, village after village. It even overslipped to Burkina Faso. Mm-hmm. And through this, Niger, there's one village which is very green, and it shows the power of community.
Yeah.
It shows the power of unity and the power of using the indigenous traditional knowledge to, you know, to solve a problem. Yeah.
Wow, I've had so much fun speaking to you, and thank you so much for joining us. We'll be sure to link your work on the description, and everyone can follow you and show you support. Thank you so much.
Yes,
it's a wrap.